Was
so
that
on and so forth.
Cameron Diaz or Penelope Cruz?
It's Penelope Cruz.
It's
Penelope?
Penelope.
I've never met a woman named Penelope.
Well, that's how it's spelled.
What do they call you?
Penelope.
They call me Penelope. Oh, beautiful name, Penelope.
So, you agree. Graphic nudity across the board.
literally put words in my mouth.
That's how the show should start.
Let's start the show.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I'm the dude.
What is it?
It's the one that said bad motherfucker.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
We're sending you back to the future!
All right. Welcome back to a new edition of our show, you film-watching movie huskers. My name is Nick Drake.
And I guess I'm Jordan no more. I guess. This time around. I don't know. Welcome to Flick of the Week.
So, we're talking about Dr. Sleep this time around.
Dr. Sleep. And The Shining, and Stephen Kang.
And Mike Flanagan, the director.
Mike Flanagan, and
probably some
yeah.
Ewan. Did you know it's pronounced Ewan McGregor?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
How else would you have said his name?
I thought people always...
Ewan,
yeah. Ewan or
Penelope.
Ewan. Yeah.
And Ewan?
That's how people say it. Like, I'm not wrong. I know it's Ewan.
Who are you hanging out with?
I'm just watching
Ewan
no,
McGregor.
That's how they always say it, like on the Oscars and stuff. Like Ewan McGregor, everybody, and he's like, "Oh, fuck off! That's not my name."
Yeah,
Chiwetel Ejiofor is like, "I got you, brother."
This is the whole show of mispronouncing people's names.
I know.
And then, oh man,
Benedict Cumberbatch is like sitting there, like the king. He's crowned for mispronunciations.
Yeah. Well, no, in the 90s, it was Keanu Reeves. No one could say his name.
Really? What did they
what
say?
Was it Keanu Reeves?
Keanu.
Keanu. My name is Keanu Reeves.
My name is Keanu Reeves. I'm a John Wick.
All right. Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep.
You know, I never read the book, The Shining. So
I have read The Shining. I haven't read Dr. Sleep yet. Probably because I'm still...
Yeah. When did the book come out?
Like 77, somewhere in there.
No, when did Dr. Sleep come
out? Oh, that was only a couple of years ago. Pretty fresh.
Okay. I heard an interesting story. Like, he never had any intention of making a sequel book.
Well...
But it just came to him in a dream or something. And then he's like... I have to do this.
He's done sequels, but really only to one dedicated thing, which is The Dark Tower, which they really, really screwed up. Like,
oh, yeah,
Dark Tower has to be, like, at the very minimum, like a Lord of the Rings epic for, like, 9 movies. It has to be, like, MCU.
I thought, like, that came out at the peak of when everyone is realizing that we should be making, or that, like, the next thing is miniseries.
I agree.
And I'm like, why didn't they make it a miniseries?
I think it should be a Netflix show.
It would have been a great HBO show.
Or HBO.
Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, I think Netflix might be a little bit better, because I feel like they might contend. But HBO's been known to carry seasons for, like, 9 seasons, you know? I'd be happy either way, and definitely would watch it. But, yeah, I mean, you'd think, like, now that they don't have Game of Thrones, I did hear that AMC thought about doing it that way. But, anyway, and not only that, they did it off of, like, part of the first book, and it was only an hour and a half long. I was like, what is this garbage? This is terrible. I was, like, so happy for it, and it just let me down, which is why... Stephen King is so selective about directors and stuff like that, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
The new director, he's the guy...
Mike Flanagan.
Yeah, have you seen Hill House or The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix?
Everyone's telling me about that. I should watch that. I guess that's my next
thing.
You
know, I know you don't like monsters and stuff, because there is, like, ghosts in it. Like, there's no hiding that. But... You said that you also really like thrillers, and I think you would enjoy this like a lot. Especially like in episode 3 going forward, you would probably be glued to it.
Yeah.
And then
I've heard nothing but good things.
Well, here's the thing too. Have you ever seen The Haunting? Remember that movie with Liam Neeson's and Owen Wilson?
I have not seen that, actually.
Really? Okay. So it was like doctors doing tests in this like supposed haunted house and stuff like that. Anyway, that and this one are all based on like this 30s or 40s written book that Netflix got the rights to and made like a really good show out of it and something modern. But here's the crazy part, dude. You're watching the show. When you're done with the show, watch this YouTube video. It like shows you how many ghosts are like in your face the entire show that you have no idea about. And like some of them are like right next to people. And you're like, how the hell did that? It's like insane. And there's just like dead people's faces and stuff like that. Just like they're subway hidden. Yeah. In the show.
They're hidden in subways.
So no, I would assume Stephen King probably liked that too and was like excited for, and he's done other, he did Gerald's Game also on Netflix, Netflix. They've done like 3 or 4 Stephen King movies now, just Netflix. He did that one. So
yeah, I'm looking at, it looks like, his major credits, what's the guy's name again? Mike Flanagan. Yeah. His major credits are in editing, actually. And I think that's where he probably got the attention of Stephen King.
Some would argue that the editing is where you make the movie.
Yeah. Well, if you go watch the breakdown of how I made my latest thing, you'll probably agree.
Where can people see totally... that, Jordan?
Go to shameless plug. Go to my YouTube channel. Check out, search Jordan No More, no spaces, and check out my newest short film. But also accompanied with it is the making of or the VFX breakdown. And if you just look at the raw shots, you'll be like, you won't even be able to see the movie that is like the movie, you know, because we did the whole movie in a supply closet. With one costume, we made it look like two costumes. So the budget of the movie was $50. So,
no spaces, people. No spaces. That's what I got out of that.
Moving on.
But I read The Shining. I haven't gotten to Dr. Sleep yet because all of his books, his books. Are like why we have the word tome because they are seriously just epics, every single one of them. 5,000-6,000 pages, you know. And I think like a normal book is somewhere between like 200 and 300 pages.
200 and 300, yeah.
So, but Stephen King doesn't play by the rules, people, and that's why he has movie deals. But he also got his work like really shit on, and now he's in a position to like redo it, and I'm glad that that's being done for one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm impressed.
But yeah, he was like asked to kind of whip back around here. He had done sequels only really for the Dark Tower series, which has spanned like his whole like writing career. And I guess he was like at a signing and somebody once asked him like, whatever happened to Danny, the little boy? And then he's like, you know, I want to answer that. And so he wrote this book.
Wow. Yeah. I see. I didn't know the whole story, but it's just really fascinating that, you know, what's funny, like when in the movie world, if you know, like the whole Harold and Kumar, what's this guy's Bill and Ted, like they come out with a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure sequel 20 years later or something crazy like that, you scoff that. You're like, it's just a money grab. But then when a book, which I don't know if there's many other examples of this exact thing happening, but when an acclaimed author writes a sequel to one of his best books, like like 20 years later, 30 years later, or something like that, you like...
I don't think it's ever happened.
Yeah, this is...
Not on a good level, anyway.
Yeah, it adds like a level of intrigue. It's like, this is crazy. I've never heard of this.
Well, not only that, but, you know, books are definitely way more labored over. They come up, they're like, well, you want to do another Bill and Ted? We can get the whole cast behind it. We'll write a script and let's just do it. And they're all like, okay.
Exactly.
But, like, this takes, like, careful planning. He's writing new characters. You know, it's an original. It's a sequel. But the guy's, like, so much older and it's... You know what I mean? There's nothing. You're not going to get Jack Nicholson back for this movie and stuff like that, unless they do some crazy Tron CGI that I don't know about. But I'm pretty sure he's retired. So I was watching this like 10-minute like little what do you call that? The press kit or whatever that movies do on the behind the scenes. Electronic.
I don't know. Like
the EPKs.
EPK. Yeah.
So they had one of those for The Shining. I thought, like, I was watching that John Malkovich movie, Color Me Kubrick and the Moonwalkers, and they make him seem like a weird foreigner. And I was like, man, he was, like, the most normal American dude ever. It was like an American dad on set. It was, like, really weird. And, like, Shelley Long, like, screwed up this one scene and he, like, got on her. They're, like, casting all this fake snow and wind and she was, like, trying to escape out of the mansion. And she just kind of walks out. Oh, you seen that?
I have seen this exactly.
Oh, isn't that just, like, gold, though?
It's brutal. I think that, brutal. I mean, it's interesting to hear these stories and it's definitely, like... It's a bygone era, but it seems, looking at the way, I mean, it seems like a cakewalk compared to some movie sets that we've heard of, like, you know, imagine being on the set of Platoon.
Yeah.
Versus this, but it still seems a little like psychologically rough. It's just like she's getting beat up by, you know, Kubrick.
Yeah. Well, I think he was doing that to everybody. Even like Jack Nicholson, he was like, no, don't say it that way. To my understanding, like, line readings are really not what you want to do with actors. So
yeah,
like a line reading, for those who don't know, is like when you flat out tell people what to say, not like, hey, can you have more emotion this way, but you're like, no, say it like this, I want to go home today. Like the actor is not doing a job at that point. So but
yeah. I wonder, I'm going to look this up while we're, I know this is kind of a segue, but it's similar. I'm looking at the freeze frames from the you know, like screen grabs from Dr. Sleep. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, in the trailer, even they obviously do cutbacks to like the original Shining. But I wonder, are those shots actually from The Shining or did they recreate them like in Ready Player One?
I'm thinking that this studio probably had the rights, so I don't know. Yeah, Ready Player One, like, seemed like that was definitely mostly recreation.
It was, because you got to see those same places from different angles, mm-hmm. but they started with the original angle, and then it kind of moved. And I remember watching that, and I you know, it's on, I think it's on HBO right now, and I've watched it at home a couple of times, but, dude... I know we're taking a little bit of a departure, but like Spielberg, I felt like for a while that he was kind of losing his edge, but then I actually really loved Ready Player One. It was like totally a Spielberg movie.
I liked it too.
And it was super CGI.
I just didn't like the CGI old lady. That was like the only part of that whole movie that I was like, oh, like,
oh, in the tub. Yeah,
I was just, but the whole rest of the movie, I totally enjoyed. And I read that book too. That was actually pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, just to, I think that's actually not that much of a departure, because in that movie they're talking about how that was a work that Stephen King didn't like. And how often is it that you get a movie that is acclaimed as like one of the best movies by the best director, and one of the best writers is like, that's shit. Like, and it's his work, and it, you know, you'd have the fans on like such a weird fence, because I think today, like, if you screwed it up, you'd just get like fired. But that is just such a weird spot in history for film, and fans are just like, you know, it is a good movie, but it's not the book.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think like hardly any other movie has been like that, where you could spit in the face. He literally did this, by the way, of, well, not literally, but in the face of the guy who made the work, the guy you called up because you loved the book, and you disrespect him, but it turns out to be such a beloved film. Like, apparently, like, I don't remember this part in the book, but there's like a car in the book that the character drives, and they change the car in the movie on purpose. And then when the cook is driving back up to the Overlook Hotel, there's an accident, and it's the car from the book that is in the accident. So it's like, this is my vehicle now. I'm going to crush your vehicle, is like basically what that's saying.
Wow.
And
I didn't know that.
I think he's been pretty, even though he's flat out said, like, I don't like this movie, he's not like a little bitch about it, though. Stephen King's like, you know, I see this as a beautiful car with no engine in it. And he brings up the fact that the end of the movie, spoiler for anybody that hasn't seen this film in forever. Then in the movie, the hotel freezes. In the book, it burns. And there's no maze in the book, by the way. It focuses so much more on Danny internally. Like, it's almost like a side-by-side of Danny and the father, like, is the book. And Danny's kind of just, there's no, it features him, but there's no internal dialogue. There's no really making him the feature character. And, you know, rightfully so, because you have Jack Nicholson, like, what are you going to do? But I wonder, how does the sequel, especially when it shows him going back to the hotel, going to take that?
I don't know. It is crazy. By the way, since we've been talking, I did find these are all recreations, dude. None of this is actually from the movie.
For the Doctor Sleep? Crazy? Oh, yeah. Really?
And it's not exact. And that's why I'm thinking my like subliminal brain was figuring that out. Like, because the very specific shot that I think was in just fried in the back of my retina is the shot of, what's the kid's name?
Danny.
Why am I? Danny. On his little tyke, like little tyke trike bike. Whatever, tyke trike bike. riding down the hall, and he stops at the door and looks over, and the door's open. Remember that?
Okay, yeah.
That specific frame is in the trailer, and obviously it's iconic from the Shining. And I was like, something's off. Like, it looks really good, but something's different. It's totally different. The frames are like, it's exactly the same but different.
But do you think it could be B-roll, or is it all really recreation?
It's totally recreated. It's a different kid. Even
really?
Like, I'm looking at the frame side by side right now. It's like the carpet's like different color. Like the carpet in the original Shining, the brighter orange was orange, and then in this in Dr. Sleep, the bright part of the carpet is yellow. It's just more of an homage to the poster. So I think they did that on purpose. But also it could be a kind of a poetic thing of how, like, you know, when you age, your memories shift and change.
That, or so, yeah, maybe the actual, just the hotel dissolving into recent years.
Well, no, I mean, this is the shot with the kid.
Oh, on
the,
okay.
The trike looking. Okay. I'll send you this picture. It's like exact. I know we're going on like a tangent, but
does it show the door?
I encourage you who's listening.
Does it show the door?
No, it doesn't show the door.
I was going to ask you what the number is, because they changed it. In the movie, it's like 237. In the book, it's 217. And you'll see like a lot of fans of like Stephen King in like movies and stuff. Like, they'll put the number 217 places. But I was like, I wonder if they would change it and back to the original thing.
Yeah. Well, I sent that link to you.
Okay.
That image.
Thank you.
But there's a bunch of them. But yeah, if you're listening at home, get on Google and I typed in The Shining sequel comparison, and that's, and it brought up a bunch of different frames. Like, the biggest glaring difference is the shot of the hallway with the twins at the end.
Yeah.
It's, like, totally different, but I think it's because it's a memory of the event and not... I think that's probably the poetic deal here. It's, like, we made the set virtually the same, but the lighting is a little different, and the, you know, it's supposed to indicate how it really looked versus how his memory was, you know?
Right.
Of the event, so...
Man, I'm excited to see this one. We've talked about him so many times. This is just another really good year for Stephen King. He's everywhere, man. Yeah. Netflix, Hulu. I mean, it is just a great time for horror fans. And not only that, but thriller fans like yourself. Because a lot of them aren't monster movies. They're just like people delving into madness.
Yeah.
And like... They're all, the thing is, like, Stephen King makes it seem like everybody's a writer. Like, everybody is a writer. Jack Torrance in that movie is a writer. Secret Window, he's a writer. It's like, he's writing himself all the time.
Well, that's, I mean, that's kind of goes into that classic trope of write what you know.
I guess so.
But I like the, so to go into the inspirational movie segment of the day, I like... The frame, people say write what you know, but then I forget who I've heard say a better version of that phrase is write what you want to know. And I thought that was more interesting. Mm. It's like if you have an idea, something that's like eating at you, you're like, I really want to explore that more. That is more interesting from a writer's standpoint. And I think maybe that's what Stephen King does, is he has these ideas, but what he does is he injects himself into it as the essentially the vehicle for the story. It's like this character, because he wants to explore it personally, so it's more personal to him if you put like a writer in the story.
He says that he doesn't have any clue where he gets them from. It's like for The Mist, you seen that one with Tom Jane? Yeah. So like he was just going to the grocery store with his son, and like he was just imagining like, what if there was like a whole bunch of fucking monsters tearing this place apart? Wrote the short story.
I think that's how like all of the greatest ideas come. They don't, nothing is completely like nothing. I don't know. I could be wrong. There's got to be an edge case, but most of the things that are the great stories that have ever been written and told are ones that came from an ethereal place and not from like, well, I was looking at my bike and I thought I'm going to make a movie about the Hells Angels, you know, like I was, it's usually like something that pops into your brain without any context. You're just like, what? You know,
I think he's honestly just a madman, and he's just one of those brains that people try to study, but I don't think that it should be, because it's just trying to understand him is trying to understand art, and it's all subjective, and there's almost nothing consistent, like, except for the fact that they can be scary and they're weird. Like I heard, and the thing is, like, he's also been two different people. He's been somebody that's been such a hardcore alcoholic writing great stories, and somebody that's been a straight edge guy writing great stories. And it's so weird. And there's, it's so all over the place. It's not like you could say, well, he was better when he was like that or better now, or he just writes so many different things and just keeps everybody on their toes. I heard this rumor that Cujo was written when he was like blackout drunk and woke up and had no memory of writing it. I hope that's true, because that's freaking cool. Can you imagine you made a movie like with Clayton or something, and you don't remember making it? Like, whoa, where the hell did this come from?
The irony of that, there is some truth to that, even in my own experience, because the beauty of a movie, and writing too, anything that you make, is that like the evidence echoes through the project itself. It's still there, like what you made, but your memory shifts and morphs, but the project remains. Like, if you go back to my very first short film, that was like when I was out of high school, Irony of Relativity, I can't tell you much. We remember the lessons learned, but I can't really tell you about any day, any particular day, or like what the fuck happened. I don't remember. It's just like, I don't even remember how I came about putting myself in the movie, but I'm in it. It's like, you know, it's very interesting how that works, but it's,
I like the one where you did 127 hours.
Yeah, it's still one of my shining achievements of acting. It's 127 minutes.
What was the one you did where you like killed a guy or something? You're like, why do we hire these guys? Just always like laughed at that scene.
I was a bad guy in a sci-fi movie called Lear.
Was this your? Oh yeah, that was yours.
I produced it. I didn't. Oh,
you didn't direct
it?
Okay.
No, I was just an actor and a producer. So I just had a little cameo. But yeah, I was like the I was like number two.
Bad guy number two.
Your stock is rising, number two.
I was watching King of Queens, and like Arthur, like the dad or whatever, he like somehow gets a hold of Lou Ferrigno and wants to show him his script, and he doesn't want to give Lou Ferrigno like a big part. He wants to be in this movie. He has no business making a movie. He just wrote a script, and he's like, I find some hard problems with this script, Arthur, because there's like five guys named Frank. And he's like, well, I don't want you for Frank anyway. I want you to be thug number two. He's like, well, that's another thing. There was no thug number one.
It's hilarious.
So, Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep.
Well, tell me about The Shining.
I am looking at this side by side.
Tell me.
I am looking at the... You want me to tell you something about The Shining?
I want you to tell me from a director, filmmaker point of view... What makes this great? Because I know that he put like some subversion in this film, and it definitely captures the eye. But for the unassuming viewer, you don't know why.
Yeah, well, I think there's two big things, and one of them kind of could be tied directly into what, you know, might have frustrated Stephen King. Kubrick likes to understand a story like holistically, so much so that what he ends up doing on screen is he cuts most of everything that is like the subtext, like the context of things. He cuts that out, and he likes to just leave it to your imagination for a lot of things. And so that's why he would probably, I mean, like you pointed out some glaring things where he was like basically, you know, flipping the bird to Stephen King. And he's like, I crashed your car, bitch. But he set the stage for what nowadays, like, you know, people look at movies like There Will Be Blood, and they're like, ooh, it was just tense, slow, agonizing thriller feeling. I don't know, you know, like dreadful thrill. That's kind of the tone. But it's like, you know, Kubrick was doing that years prior, you know, and I think that's a big thing, is just drawing things out really long and proposing really virtually simple themes. And like you said, there's like subverted thoughts in there.
Well, I heard that he went to like advertisers and like employed techniques where it was attacking people's subconscious, like colors and just the music. And that's a weird thing, is like, he's a director that is playing like a 3-tiered level chess game. Like, he is on the ball with everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like the unfortunate truth about, filmmakers in general, and this is since the dawn of time, and there's a reason why there's a handful, or you could count on two hands the amount of directors that are like memorable, incredibly memorable, and will go on to be known as the greats.
Two handfuls,
and
people.
The reason two handfuls,
two oh, handfuls, a handful. Maybe two. I don't know.
You know, two in a hand, a bird in the bush, whatever the fuck they said. Get two birds stoned at once. Okay. No, most directors in Hollywood since the dawn of time are people that talk the talk, and you know, they're like fast talkers with, you know, not so much depth, and they're more focused on just the performance. It's like they're really just like actors behind the screen that tell the actors what to do, and then they rely on the specialties of all these other people to invent things that help tailor to their vision. But like you said about Stanley Kubrick, is he's all over the board. He's thinking in great detail about how, like, okay, if this yeah, like you said, like the color palette, how that'll affect the audience, you know, how long to stay on this shot. And then the biggest thing that he's always said, like I said, is he'll just look at a piece of dialogue and say, do we even need that? Nope. He's like, don't even need the backstory of finding out about all the mobsters and who owned the hotel. Let's leave that to your imagination. One of the big ones that I never noticed, and he had said in that EPK, was the whole concept of who the hell lets, you know, the Jack Nicholson out of the freezer.
Yeah, it was the.
They didn't show that.
It was the ghost, right? I mean.
So that, see that, but it's up to your interpretation. They just don't show that. They just, he was in there and he's locked and he can't get out. And then next thing you know, he's out. So, and that's a great thing. That's just like, it's, you could easily brush that off, but then think about it. It's like most filmmakers would probably have probably juggled like the morality of that. Like, well, we have to show that, you know, like we have to show things. So, and it's really what you don't show that makes a story more compelling.
I thought it like was definitely the ghost, though. Like, man, maybe you're right. Maybe it just sparks like a conversation about what happened. But like, you know, at the mm-hmm. end where he's like in the picture with the people in the hotel, like I thought that was mm-hmm. just like he's part of it now.
Well, that's another thing is that didn't they show that picture? Or you seen that earlier in the movie?
What? But it had him in it, though? I thought it was only like at the end where it like focuses like, hey, there he is.
Yeah, I think he had noticed the picture before, and yeah, I think that's another one of the things that just makes you think. It's like, does that mean that he was always there?
Have you seen that room 237?
I did watch a little bit of that. I never finished.
It was really weird. Like all these people, like taken to the, they're like, oh well, Kubrick was like behind the moon landing footage.
I haven't heard of that.
And, but they were like, if you look at this, there's like a bunch of like racial undertones like against Indians. And I was like, well, I thought it was just like a Colorado hotel that was like from like that era. So like that's what the set designer would do. But it's like really weird. Like there's specifically like this Calamay with like a Indian face on it. Whatever it is, like salt or spice or whatever the hell it is. And it's like shown like so many times in the movie. And my first reaction would be like, well, that's marketing. But I'm like, but for fucking what? Like, who the hell buys that? Mm-hmm. Like, it might have been actually intentionally placed there for some reason. It's just so strange. But yeah, it was pretty thought provoking. I was like, what the fuck is this movie about now? I thought I knew it, but now I have no clue. And I hope Dr. Sleep doesn't do that to me.
You know, it's interesting. So in the talks of the movie Dr. Sleep versus the book, it's like the fact that the sequel has stuff like aesthetics leading back to The Shining, the movie, considering that Stephen King didn't like The Shining and did his own version, right? That wasn't as good.
True.
So is this showing the idea? Is this like proposing the idea that The Shining, the Stephen King Shining, or no, the Stanley Kubrick Shining is the definitive version?
I don't know.
Because they use the aesthetics.
Because I haven't read the book, and I feel like that might be the only way. But like the hotel burnt, and like it shows him going back, and he's like, there's a place. I'm like, oh, where's this place? Yeah. The Overlook Hotel? Well, what do you know? And
but what if he's going back just in
that's,
his mind?
Yeah, you exactly. Never know how those scenes... That would be my hope, to be honest with you. I hope that's what it is, or some sort of restoration is in there. I guess I would have to just read the book, but I would think from everything else, though, except for that part, because we're still hazy on that, all the other shots in the trailer look like they're stuff from the book, too. Like, they're obviously from the movie, but they're also, they line up with the book.
Well, I was going to point out, though, that you were asking about the hotel room. They did keep the original hotel room number 237.
Ooh. All right.
Yeah, so, you see, it's... I don't know, man.
I don't know.
See, it's a baby. Somewhere in the distance, there's a baby crying about this.
Always a baby crying here.
Well, he's crying about the 237, Matt.
Hell, it's 217. It's a big deal.
Why did he change the hotel number? That's crazy. What does it matter?
I would keep 217 if the author wrote that, but I would also like burn it down too. I wouldn't like you adapt a book to screen. Why? I don't think it's my place. I mean, obviously you have to change some things to fit a tome into a 2-hour film, but Jesus, like if I was writing a script or hired to write a script, like, I could never be that disrespectful to the person that wrote the original work. Mm. But, you know, it was at the time where Stephen King was selling off his rights left and right, because he was going to be, like, homeless with his family. He was, like, an alcoholic. He sold Carrie and, like, finally started making a living at this. And it was like people just started buying up his right, like Marvel did. Like they're about to go bankrupt and they sold all their shit off, and now they finally got it back with the help of Disney. So
yeah.
And speaking of that, did you know that Ewan McGregor is, I'm 99% sure it's supposed to be a show of he's being Obi-Wan Kenobi again on Disney Plus. Really? Yeah. Have you got Disney Plus yet?
No.
I paid $140 and it gave me 3 years of Disney Plus, which I was like, that's what I pay for 1 year of Netflix.
Wow.
But yeah, and then after that, it's supposed to be $770 a year or something. But because I have kids, so, you know, it fits me. But here's the thing, it has all the Star Wars, it has all the Marvels. And with the Star Wars, his show's going to be there now. And Jeff Goldblum has, like, a weird show for some reason on there, too.
I was literally going to say, that's one of the reasons why I'm considering getting it, because his show, The World According to Jeff Goldblum, sounds
like... And did you know they own Nat Geo? I had no clue until they're like, and you get Nat Geo. I'm like, well, who knew?
Oh, it's a monopoly, wasn't dude. I mean, it's the best monopoly there could be, but it is a monopoly.
Do you remember Jack Hanna? He was like the animal guy that was like always on. It was like before the Crocodile Hunter.
Interesting.
Anyway, Jack Hanna.
Anyways. I remember Steve Irwin.
I remember Steve. Do you remember the movie?
You
never saw the Crocodile Hunter, the movie? Oh, man, there was a movie.
Maybe
his whole family in there. Like, wow. They're like trying to get some animal, like the whole movie, and showing you animals along the way. I think they were trying to get like a white crocodile or something. So silly.
Interesting.
Can you imagine like you being that good at like any other job, and they're like, let's make a fictional movie around your real job? Like, you'd never see somebody like in a cubicle getting like filmed for something like that.
No, what do you call that? It's a bias. it's job placement bias.
That's right. It's unfair placement.
Hey, unfair placement. My job's interesting too. What do you
drive
do?
A bus?
Work for the IRS? No. We're not making a show about that.
Here's the thing, is they probably would make a movie about Kim Kardashian or something. I was like, oh, God.
Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I don't understand
movie.
It. Like, I understand it because people are stupid, but I don't understand. Like, how? How is that fun?
I feel like we're almost past that, too, because the dichotomy of... I think that's the right word I'm trying to use. Of like
today, Junior.
Reality TV. The reality of reality TV is so much more sophisticated now because of YouTube, because of like vlogging and like
people are just
what
like
kids are doing on
YouTube. Well, now it's actually reality TV, like in comparison.
It is because, well, the biggest thing that changes the medium, and I think everyone catches on to this now, is that like when you have a creator on YouTube, they are the star, the producer, the filmer, the editor, the distribution company, the whole vehicle. And so there's still some deception going on because it's not truly reality, just like how you only post, you know, your happy moments on Instagram or whatever, but it's still like it's not completely deceiving how like the Kardashians.
Well, there's
like,
no producer creating a situation for me to have an episode. So
I'm about to blow a lot of people's minds if they're listening to this and they actually watch the Kardashians.
Her butt is fake.
They don't live in that house.
They don't live in the house.
It's a
even?
Set house.
No way. I believe it.
They don't. That house that's in the show is just off of Fryman Canyon, which is a really popular hiking trail. You can walk right by it, and you're like, "Oh, there's that house that you see on the Kardashians." No one lives there. It's just
it's
for
all
movies.
For theater, though. Like just, they don't even own it or anything.
They don't. No, it belongs to the production company.
Oh my god!
Like, and they shoot scenes whenever they do anything that's outside, getting in cars and stuff. They like go they get pickup shots with the family. It's like, this isn't reality TV at all.
So there's like waxing their vaginas in somebody else's house? That's weird.
Well, no, all the interior shit's somewhere else.
Oh, so that's only the
house, but it's just for pickup shots to show like if they're coming and going from a house. They don't actually they live in Calabasas, which is way far. It's like 15, almost 20 miles from where that house is, you know. And the point is so you don't have creepy fans showing up at the door.
Cam.
It's totally, what do you call that? It's for privacy. But it's like, it's still kind of cheesy. It's like, oh, this is, nothing about this is real. Like, you know, I don't know.
Who, what was the guy's name who directed The Godfather?
De Palma?
No.
Or was it, no, it's,
He made Apocalypse Now. Look it up while I pander.
I just heard that coming a mile away.
His daughter, she made Lost in Translation, and that other one with Emma Watson, where they were like breaking into celebrities' houses. They were just following like their Instagrams and Facebooks to see when they were leaving for a party.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Sophia Coppola. What was the name of that movie? Look that up while I pander.
We gotta get one more of those in before the episode's over. You're talking about Spring Breakers.
No, right? No, that's no, that's Harmony Korine or whatever his name is. No, Sofia Coppola. She made Lost in Translation and this movie, which I think it was made like 2012, 2011. I think I'm pretty close.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see how that would be because like it was like such a real thing. They made a movie about the people breaking into people's houses.
What was the story? They were breaking into houses.
They were
doing
regular
what?
Kids like us, you know, just young, beautiful kids. And
are we young, beautiful kids? I think we're like almost middle-aged men.
Damn it.
We're quarter-aged men.
I'm having a quarter-life crisis here. Okay. But no, they were just regular girls and stuff, and they were following the social media.
Diversion suicides?
No.
Or is it newer?
Much newer. 2012, dude. This. That was like 2000.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
But yeah, they were just following their social medias and breaking into their houses when they knew they were going to Kanye's party. It's it was like based on a true story, and Emma Watson had like an American accent.
Huh. I'm not finding it.
I hope I got the director right. I'm pretty sure I did.
No. Nope, you fucked up. I have no clue.
Well, what if I look up... Anyway, you talk about something else while I pander.
Distract the audience while I pander.
The Bling Ring. That's it. That's it.
Oh, I found it.
Was it Sofia Coppola?
There you go.
Yes.
Yes. You're right.
I still got my member berries.
I remember. So, Sofia Coppola. I don't know.
She was on Marc Maron, and she was saying something like Richard Gere would like swim nude at their house when she was like a little girl. I'm like, how fucking weird is that, dude? You're not that big of a star where you just get to get away with like. I realize that stars got away with a lot, according to Weinstein, but like that's pedophilia. Just about like you could probably get written up for that.
Yeah, well,
and the gerbil thing is that real or is that just fake?
What gerbil?
The thing with he like stuck a gerbil up his ass or whatever.
I have never heard this
it's
story.
It's like a pretty common rumor. Like you ask, like if you're like, oh, what was that movie with the guy from Primal Fear? And then they're like, you know, the guy with a gerbil up his ass, Richard Gere? Yeah, yeah. Like,
I've never heard this story. This is
I guarantee you, it's a pretty common, like, well-known rumor, if not true.
All right. Well, I'll take
okay.
It.
That was just a Thursday for him. Anyway.
So when is Dr. Sleep coming out? Because I'm really excited about
that. November 12th, I believe.
November 12th.
Is that a Friday? Yeah, I think that's right.
November 8th is what it says
8th,
on here.
8th, fine. Whatever you want it to be.
If we could do that, I'd say make it come out today.
You know, can't you get like some LA hookups and well, technically, it comes out late night Thursday, November 7th.
Oh, speaking of that, are you coming out?
I am.
Are you coming out that weekend?
I am. I am coming out that weekend.
Oh, there you go.
I'm gonna also come out that weekend. So just so you know, be prepared.
Oh, this is interesting. Nick, I didn't know that about you.
Well, you technically you don't till the 7th.
That's how politics works.
Maybe we can shoot another live episode.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, you're coming out that weekend, so maybe we'll do another live episode. If you're listening to this, let us know what you think we should
record. I thought we could do a little skit called First We Yeast. And there's just, like, hookers. And we're like, hey, I'm Nick. And this is the show with hot girls and even hotter questions with pH unbalanced pussy. This is my guest, Jordan Moore. And you're like, Nick, should we do this? And I'll be like, yep. We're going to do 10 up and 10 down, however many wings they have on that other show. or I know I've sold you with that one. You know, totally illegal hookers in L.A. But, or is it legal there? It's legal in Vegas, right? anyway, I don't like the idea either. I don't know why I came up with it. But what about... That's probably too
expensive. This is an incredible pitch room.
I don't have that much money.
I didn't like that idea either.
It's not going to be anybody.
Why are you pitching it?
You know, to see if I gain interest. You never know. Sometimes you just shoot for the moon and you get what you talked about, but... How about shot ones where we do 10 shots and ask each other questions?
I kind of like that idea. I know you were texting me about it the other day and you just really, really wanted me to give you like praise for it.
I didn't want praise. I just wanted something or another idea. I hate being shot down and people are like, no, that's dumb. Like, okay, well, would give me something.
I don't think I shot you down. I just don't think I gave you an answer.
That's worse. The fear of not knowing.
I left you
on red.
I didn't
sleep.
Well,
I left you on red.
Sorry for your lack of sleep.
Yeah. You didn't swipe left or right. You just left me.
Yep. I just closed the app. Walk away. Anyways, next week we're talking about Ford v. Ferrari. I think we're talking about that,
yes.
Right? Dude, so stoked.
Can you believe that at his age, Christian Bale can still like just drop and pick up weight and like nobody... He had the record, I believe. Maybe he still does. Most record lost weight for a film, and most for gained, because he did The Mechanic, and then did Batman.
Yeah, and he was like 225 in Batman.
And
gained more weight than he needed, and he had to lose weight.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he was like the biggest in the first one, Batman Begins.
Yeah, definitely.
The third one, I was he kind of looks just like a regular dude. Like, I don't know. I might just go commit crimes anyway. Like, oh, great, Batman. See ya.
The scenes when he was when he was supposed to be young Bruce Wayne, like during the conviction of his
Joe Chill, the people that killed the guy who killed his parents.
Yeah, during that, like they intentionally like did, you know, Lord of the Rings style trickery to like make him look smaller around people, made him wear really baggy clothes to hide the fact that he's fucking huge.
That's right. But like the third movie, insane. He was just a skinny dude.
Well, that was the point of the first and or the second and third was that he's so
rundown,
preoccupied with his job of fighting crime that he's not healthy.
He's not working out.
Like
we have no cartilage in
your
knees.
And then the third one, he was locked away in his fucking mansion the whole time, not doing anything.
He's
so.
In jail. Yeah.
But I think that this movie, Ford v Ferrari, he looks adequate. I mean, we'll wait till next week to talk about it. But he looks. I think he looks. That's probably his normal, like resting body weight.
You think that is? Probably, I thought like.
Yeah.
Maybe
he's a skinny guy. I think he's like a buck. He's like a buck 80 or a buck 70.
It,
I don't know
it's
how tall
not
he is.
Full. I think like Equilibrium is regular Christian Bale.
Well, he was younger then. We're talking about an older man now. Like, and he's like, I think he's an old frail person.
Do you
person
get skinnier when you're
parents.
Older? Because I'd like to just get older than shit.
Everyone reacts differently. Not everyone can, you know, some people age, unfortunately, I was going to say...
Well, here's how we solve Kurt that Russell question. Or... Is the guy that he's portraying like a really skinny dude? Because then he probably is not at resting body weight.
He looks... No, the guy is just normal. Like, I think that was a good casting choice. Like, Christian Bale actually looks like the guy. If you go look at pictures... Okay. I looked at pictures and the guy really was relatively the same... Dude, if he lost weight, I'm guaranteeing it was only something in the neighborhood of like 10 or 15 pounds. It's like, okay, I'm going to drop 10 or 15 pounds, which you can do if you're that
but
guy.
But no, that's
like,
the
oh, that's
thing. He's
the
following the Vice movie where he had like a bowling ball stomach to that.
Yeah.
So it was like a drastic
change. Well, when he
change.
Was doing, so a couple of months, if you watched all of the promotion for Vice, he was doing the press junket like... You know, I think it was 3 or 4 months off of shooting, and he was already down. He looked a little chubby, but he was already down. He's like, yeah, I'm already, like, back down. I stopped eating that diet, and I'm back down to, you know, I'm losing weight.
Well, you remember
so
Night of
Cups? I
think
Cups? The guy's naturally skinny.
Did you watch that one, the Terrence Malick film?
Yeah.
I think that's regular Bale, and that wasn't that long ago. And that's, like, probably... a good 20 pounds more than he is in Ford or Ferrari.
Yeah. Well, I guess
Matt Damon,
we'll do research and find out.
Matt Damon did that.
Matt Damon
he
looks
did that
good.
Like one time where he'd like what was that one called with Denzel and Meg Ryan? Something, something
remember.
Fire.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Courage Under Fire. And he was like playing like a drug addict in the military. And he like said, he said he would never do it again.
Yeah, that's well. He's looking good now because he's like his last few roles. I think he looked a little chubby.
Didn't he look huge in that Invictus movie though?
Invictus.
Remember with Nelson Mandela, and he's like, he's the rugby player. He's like,
yeah,
we're going to win the World Cup
to play
and
a rugby player.
Save people from being imprisoned wrongfully. And I was like, good luck, but okay.
Yeah, I think he was. That was the one movie where he was definitely
yoked,
getting in shape very specifically to be like a rugby player, which is just, he's fit, but he's
I
thick.
Think they
he's
should
like,
trade Affleck for freaking Damon for Batman. I'd watch that for sure.
That would be dope, but then they would ruin their friendships.
Would it? Would it?
It might.
I mean, you know what? Give me anything. He's not in any Marvel things, is he? He's like one of the few actors that has just like totally eluded it, and he could be anybody. If Ben Affleck could be Daredevil and Batman, Matt Damon could get something. He was like in that little cameo role in Thor, I guess, but that doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Anyway, too forgetting.
Anyway. Well, you got the member berries. I just... I threw out my berries.
All right. Well, give us a like on social media, people. Read our nice articles.
Yeah, check out our articles on Medium and keyword flick of the week. Well, key multiple words. definitely spaces. And check us out on YouTube. We got one video up. I'm a little behind on that, but and you keep listening, we'll keep arguing.
All right.
Boom.